Rave Radio. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of AV Insider. As always, I am your host, Johnny Mota. Today, I am joined by my special guest, Bob Hadsell. He is the home theater sales manager of Draper. But before I bring him in, as always, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Ingram Micro. They are the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you head over to ingrammicro.com, you can see some of the product offerings they have for you as an integrator, and you probably are using some already, as we learned on last night's show. My guest was one of them, and thanks, shout out to Ankia for doing that. They're not Chipotle. That's something I said. I had Chipotle for lunch, so they were on the brain. So a little Freudian lunchtime slip there on my part. Hey, Bob, thank you for taking the time to be on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome, Johnny. Thank you for asking me to be part of your show.
Yeah, man, I like talking about audio, video, automation, technology, and so anytime I get to learn, it's a benefit to me and my listeners, probably mainly just to me because I like to absorb things like a sponge and learn. I think that's probably why I'm in this industry. People ask me if I ever get bored, and because technology changes so much, I'm never going to learn everything. And to some people, I think that's a downfall because they want to know everything. But I think that if I ever learned everything, that it would become boring, and there just wouldn't be more to do, I guess. But it's also a challenge.
Sure. One of the things that is really great about this industry is that it's constantly changing. So even if you feel like you've learned everything, they're going to change it on you within the next 3 to 5 months, and you've got a brand new set of skills you need to learn.
Exactly. So if we're going to go buy that new TV next month, it's going to be outdated.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's kind of like computers were back in the 80s, which some of you might not remember that. But, at one point it was like every 3 months something new came out, and, everything else then was basically outdated. So
I don't remember much from the 80s except for my pager that I still carry because I'm expecting a phone call from the mid-80s. I'm going retro technology on that one. Bob, tell me a little bit about your background with the company, if you could.
Well, I started with Draper back in 2000, and I worked initially in inside sales and then was moved into the position I'm in now. I've done several different sales and marketing jobs before coming to Draper, and I actually started off telecommunications, and one of my first jobs was actually working on the other side of the business, if you will, as an end user using screens and projectors. So it's kind of been full circle for me coming in. When I started with Draper, the position I'm in now, it's my responsibilities are marketing and selling our products into the basically the residential side, the residential channel, and I also manage not only the efforts of our inside salespeople and regional sales managers, but I also have 15 manufacturers' representatives that are independent representatives across the U.S. and Canada that I also work with in marketing and selling our products. So it's pretty busy. As I said, it's constantly changing, and we're constantly coming up with some really new and inventive opportunities.
Well, I think that, like you said, it being a full circle, the position you're at now and starting from as the quote unquote end user is probably one of the best ways to be, I guess, in terms of marketing, sales, and promotion of the product. What better way to have that hands-on experience, right?
Exactly. You learn actually what happens with projection, and of course, the projection has changed quite a bit since I was on that side of it. But still, there are issues as far as size, projection or projector brightness, image quality, and so forth that have to be taken into account regardless.
I think we should save a little segment of the show a little bit later in the show and talk about some of those problems and things that integrators face. When Let's say someone, I'm looking to do a home theater and, I really don't know where to go. Here's my room, here's my dimensions. I know I want something, but I don't know if there's too much ambient light or, if I need higher gain on the screen or distances. And, we should really touch on that. But before we do, we should probably talk about the types of products that Draper offers for the home theater.
Sure. Well, the primary product, obviously, that we offer are projection screens. We offer fixed frame wall screens, motorized, manual, virtually everything from an 80 or 90 inch diagonal size all the way up to we make motorized screens that are as much as 28 feet wide. And I don't know there are many home theaters that would get into screens of that size, but we have the capability of making screens that large and fixed frame screens significantly larger than that, up to 80 and 100 feet wide. So Draper is a very diverse company. We started in 1902, actually as a window shade manufacturer. And back and it was a it's was started by a gentleman by the name of Luther Draper. And in the late 1950s is when we actually got into manufacturing projection screens. And through, if nothing else, serendipity, but the explosion of science in schools because of the space race and large construction and so forth, we kind of rode that wave and really grew our business based on that and became, we're actually the second largest manufacturer of projection screens in the world right now. And
That's
we
all.
so we have a I'm sorry.
I said, yeah, that's all. Just number two.
Yeah, just number two.
That, no big deal. No big deal.
We have a very significant presence on the commercial side, but also on the obviously on the residential side. And so we do projection screens again. We do masking systems. So if you want to actually have a black masking panel that comes in front of the projection screen in order to change the aspect ratio, we can do that both on a fixed frame as well as a motorized projection screen basis. We also have products, for example, we've got a product called Home Theater Stage Curtains, where it's actually the velour type of cotton curtains like you see in the old movie theaters. We manufacture those
Nice.
and sell those for home theaters. We also, again, because we started as a window shade manufacturer, we still do manufacture window shades. It's a very large part of our business overall, and a very large and growing segment of what we do on the residential side. We also manufacture projector lifts as well as flat panel TV lifts. If you want something to move or go away, at this point, because of the custom nature of our business and our abilities, we can provide that for you.
Can you provide something that'll make my neighbors move or go away? Because they don't like
I think
my loudspeaker system.
I was going to say that's probably more of an audio thing that you can actually do that will drive them away. I'm not sure that we can. I'm not sure we can provide the lift that would be big enough to move them to the side a little bit.
Okay. Well, you know what? That makes sense. I didn't know that you guys made the shades still for the theater, but that does make sense because there's a lot of, in terms of like home theater applications, not everybody can just, build a brand new room with no windows. Usually it might be an exist I when I get a call, it's usually I want a home theater, but it's like in the middle of my living room. There's windows everywhere.
Well, then that's a really important, I guess, aspect of what we do in the residential side. When before I joined Draper and right after I joined Draper, the concept of home theater was truly a dedicated theater.
Okay.
The projectors were not very bright, although they excellent in color and black levels and contrast. They just were not very bright. So projection screens were actually designed in a lot of ways to enhance and compensate for that lack of brightness. And you had to have a dedicated room where the lights came down and you did create that experience, but it was almost a requirement as far as home theater was concerned. In the mid-2000s and later, obviously, when we got into some single-lens projectors and more bright projectors and better color management and production, now all of a sudden you had the opportunity where you don't have to have a completely dedicated room in order to have a home theater. And just as you were saying, is when you have a multi-purpose room where you have either doorways or windows and like that, you can still take that space, and by using either the window shades or a good combination of projector and screen material and proper placement within the room, you can create a home theater without having to have a room dedicated to just that purpose. And so we're seeing actually more than 50% of the applications now for home theater are actually in that kind of a category of a multi-purpose room.
I think that's become more and more, like I said, because in the past, yeah, you would think home theater, well, it was very much a dedicated room, but now, you know, as technology has become more affordable and things like that, they're able, people are kind of spending more money without having to rebuild certain sections of the home, or again, don't have the money to, you know, I have a, you know, a personal home theater room. Like, I do a lot of projects with covert rooms and things like that, and things that I would never be able to afford. But at the same time, you know, I would like that same luxury or amenity in my home, but maybe I do it in, you know, a multi-purpose room where it's the living room or whatever it is, and I want to put some shades up, you know, close the blinds, darken up the room a bit, and then, you know, throw the projector on and screen, et cetera, et cetera. Without having to rebuild my house to get that experience. It's become more more common, I would say. You know, like you said, that multi-purpose room. A lot of people tell me, like, oh, you know, my home theater, and I always kind of think, I'm like, let me guess, is it your living room that you know, you put a flat panel up or whatever? Or in some cases, no, it's an actual dedicated theater, and I feel stupid for saying that. But yeah, the multi-purpose room has become more of a common thing to be called, you know, the home theater, the man cave, the whatever, but you know, turn it into that, and because the technology has become more affordable, it's not millions and millions of dollars, although you can spend that kind of money on such rooms. It definitely has become more affordable to general population.
Well, absolutely, and by the same token, the one mistake that some people can make, while the technology has improved and the price points have reduced, in some cases you can still, in that race to the bottom, so to speak, you can lose the quality. And one of the things that, especially in our particular channel, in the residential theater channel, really some of the higher priced products are actually bringing back an awful lot more value and quality than some of the lower priced products. So you don't necessarily want to sell yourself short by finding something that's low cost and you know, installing that and thinking that, you know, you've got a big picture, therefore you've got a theater. What you really want to look for are products that produce that high quality image. Because one of the things that we're really emphasizing as far as home theater is concerned, and it goes back to whether it's the dedicated room or if it's a multi-purpose room, is creating the experience. You know, it's something that in some ways has been kind of lost as we're as the explosion and the affordability of larger flat panel TVs has come into the market. Quite often people think in terms of, you know, a 50 inch or a 60 inch type TV is a pretty good sized image and, you know, I'm watching a movie, but it's really, it's not the kind of experience that you get in watching a full theatrical production.
Correct.
I'll show you my age, if you will. I'll really harken back to the old days, but
Laserdisc.
Even farther back than that. This actually goes back to the mid 1970s, and I was a high school student, and a friend of mine, her mother was a huge Gone with the Wind fan, and anything that had to do with the book, anything that had to do with the movie, she was, you know, all about it, you know, kind of like a collector, if you will. And at that time, it was the very first time that Gone with the Wind was being shown on broadcast TV. I believe it was ABC was showing it. And of course, this is back in the days before cable and channel, all the different channels we have. But it was a huge national event. And I asked her if she was going to watch Gone with the Wind on TV, and she said, absolutely not. I was floored. And I said, why would you not watch it? And she said, because I can't imagine the burning of Atlanta on a 27-inch screen. And I, you know, now it didn't hit me as much as it then as it does now, but that's truly what the difference is in experience. When you're watching a movie, if for example, if you're watching the most recent release of Star Trek, you know, that's a huge, there's so much action and so much going on with that movie that it is an experience. And how can you watch it bundled down? And that's really what home theater brings about. And the higher quality projection and screens bring about is creating that experience so you get involved in it much more than just watching it.
I completely agree with you. And I was having this conversation last night on last night's show. We were talking about Dolby Atmos and stuff, but the point that I brought up was the experience, the cinematic experience that like I try and make myself go out to get that experience. And I go, you know, if I can every couple of weeks to the theater, if there's a good enough movie that I think that I should experience in the theater, because there are plenty of movies that I just see as an advertisement. I'm like, no, I don't need to see that on the big screen. I could watch that at home or whatever, you know, in my spare time, Netflix, whatever. But the last movie that I really saw and I was really impressed by and taken away from recently in the last few weeks was Interstellar. And I really immersed myself in the film, you know, kind of just ignored that there was next to other people and just got lost with the score and the action and the screen and just the detail on the screen. And after watching it, you know, I was glad that I did, but the one thing that I didn't... Or the one thing that I was kind of upset was that I, you know, like I wish I would have went and saw it in IMAX just because that's a whole nother level of a cinematic experience. And that's like one of those movies that I tell people, I'm like, it's really something that you should go experience in the theater because it couldn't compare to the same thing. Like, oh, you know, I got a new blah, blah, blah inch LCD curve panel, yada, yada, 3D nonsense TV at home. They just don't compare. It's a whole different experience. And again, I'm going to forget it, I'm sure, but last night I was trying to... the term that I heard in a home theater design panel was providing the willing suspension of disbelief. So yeah. It was really like, you know, immersing yourself in this feeling and forgetting that you're watching a film. It's like you're a part of this like cinematic experience. It's just a whole nother realm of reality, and it just really takes you away from what's going on. And it kind of made me feel like I was a child again, just experiencing a whole nother thing. So yes, the movie and the cinematic experience is a whole nother thing from just, you know, like, oh, I watched a movie on my new OLED 55 inch screen TV, which is great. But again, it couldn't compare to being, you know, something on the big silver screen, if you will.
Yeah. And I don't want to knock, you know, other types of video, direct view and like that, because everything has its place.
Sure.
You know, you're not going to sit down and watch the evening news or, you know, some other, you know, special type program like that on a huge screen. Unless you really want to see, you know, all the warts and everything that, and pimples, but, you know, there's regular TV viewing. And then there is experiencing. And that's really what we want to emphasize. And if you really want to take full advantage of a multi-purpose and multi-use room, why not have both? You know, the advantage of a motorized screen is that you make it go away so that during the day, if you want to watch the news, you're watching it on your TV, and then when it comes time to watch a movie, the screen comes down, and now you've got the experience.
Just a side note, I watch my news exclusively on the big screen, just in 3D, just because I want that in-depth real-time news and can see when something didn't shave. We got the 12 o'clock shadow going on. In 4K, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
so let Sorry, I that was for my own amusement. You guys out there listening can choose to laugh or say that was lame, but it made me chuckle. Before we carry on, as always, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Ingram Micro, the world's largest technology distributor delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you head over to ingrammicro.com, you can check out the products they have for you as an integrator. Again, you probably might be using some as we learned on the show last night. Ingrammicro.com. Check them out. Tell them I said hi. Bob, let's talk a little bit about, motorized screens, fixed screens, curved screens, different gains, distances, rear projections, things like that. Kind of knowing when and why to use a certain type of screen and so on and so forth.
Well, the first thing really to take a look at is truly the application. Start off with what kind of room are you designing? Is it going to be a completely dedicated theater? Or is it a multi-purpose room? What are you truly wanting to accomplish? We find that in most cases, the dedicated rooms would usually use just a simple fixed frame screen. It's completely flat. It gives you excellent color response, and you've got excellent control over the environment in the room, both sound-wise and ambient light-wise. So it's a pretty simple, straightforward process that way, as compared to a multi-purpose room where, if you again, if you want something to go away, you don't necessarily want a projection screen up on the wall when it's not being used. That's where really the motorization comes in.
Sure.
In most cases, especially with residential com or com I'm sorry, projectors, not computers, with the residential type projectors, it's usually front projection that you will use. You had mentioned rear projection. Rear projection, in my mind, is probably the best case scenario overall for any type of projection for home theater. If you're not familiar with rear projection, it's basically the projector is going to be behind the screen instead of in front of the screen, and you're shooting the image through a translucent material so that the light is actually coming through and creating the image. The thinner that material is, the less it diffuses the image, and the more accurate it is, and the more clean and more precise it is. The other advantage of using rear projection is that there is no ambient light that can interfere with the light path. So you
Oh.
can literally have all the lights on in the room and have very little consequence with what's going on with the projected image as compared to a front projection where if you have the lights up, it can interfere with the light path and with the reflected light on the screen. So, this is, to me, again, rear projection is the best case scenario. Now, the downside is that, again, home theater projectors being higher quality, they're also designed with longer throw lenses so that they will be behind the viewers, so you don't hear fan noise and things like that. You have to have an extremely large space behind a projection screen if you're going to use a home theater quality projector to do rear projection. In most cases, if you were not using any kind of a light path bending application, you're going to need somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 feet behind the screen in order for the projected light to come from the projector to the screen. And there are not many people that can do that. Again, the size of houses that are needed. So with rear projection, then the next thing you do is you look at mirror systems in order to bend that light path and reduce the amount of space that's needed behind the screen, in order to still, maintain that the blackness, the lack of ambient light behind the screen, but you don't have to have the same amount of distance. But you're still talking about a fairly sizable amount of room behind the screen. So, again, depending on the application, that's the best case scenario. It's also the worst case scenario because it means you're going to lose some real estate. You can use that real estate behind the screen for other things. For example, if you need to have an equipment room for your audio equipment, the video equipment, if you're doing any other control through the house, you know, you can use that space for your equipment racks. But still, you know, you're going to be taking up some real estate behind the screen.
I'll just use one of your guys' lift to move my neighbors away, and then I'll just project that from their house to mine.
You know, that's not a bad idea. Yeah. Well, it depends on how large a space you can knock out of your wall, I guess.
I think if I can move the neighbors, I'll have a pretty good section.
Yeah, there you go.
Other than that, none of my second homes out here in Northern California support that supportive distance or extra rooms to need the rear projection, although I do see how that would be a bonus if I had the room.
Yeah. So, again, it depends on the budget. It depends on the application. If you can't go the rear projection route, then obviously the front projection is the better way to go. As far as determining the type of screens, the size and so forth, it really, again, it goes back to environment. As far as sizing the screen, our recommendation is to basically base the size of the screen on the seating distance from not the very last row or the very last seat in however you're setting up the room, but what we call the primary viewing position. A lot of people like to call it the money seat. The guy that paid for the theater, where is he sitting? That's the primary viewer. And if you take the distance from that viewer to the screen, our recommendation is to divide that distance by 3, and that'll give you the height of the screen. So in easy math, if you're sitting 15 feet away from the screen actually should be 5 feet tall, and then you use your aspect ratio to determine the width.
So distance from the quote-unquote money seat times 3?
Divide by 3.
Divide by 3.
Yeah.
So distance, divide by 3. And let me just say thank you for not saying sweet spot, because I haven't heard that a million times.
No, I like the term, you know, primary viewer, because in most people's theaters, yes, you'd like to have guests over. That's part of the experience is being able to sit down with friends and family and experience this movie. But also at the same time, most people that have a theater are not going to be using it only when they have friends and family over. You know, they're sitting there enjoying it themselves. And so where are you sitting when you enjoy it by yourself or with one or two other family members? And that's where the primary viewing comes in.
Right. I don't have my own personal home theater at home. However, at work, I do have a really nice setup that's a dedicated theater. And so after hours, if I'm not doing the podcast, I'm staying late to watch some of my favorite movies in high def, just to appreciate the cinematic views and the whole experience and all that stuff. It's all after hours, but it's something I just enjoy, you know, especially if I have to go to the theater. I can just pop in a movie and watch it there. It's awesome.
Absolutely. And one of the things to consider when you're talking about screens, because I know a lot of our customers have their customers say, I want the biggest screen possible. I've got, you know, X amount of feet with this wall and I want to fill the wall. Well, the problem actually comes into if you're sitting too close to the screen, it actually can be detrimental to a good viewing experience. If you think in terms of when you're a kid and you go to the commercial theaters and you sit down in the front row and you're looking up.
Don't ever do
you
that.
Know, yeah, well, it was fun back then when you were a little kid.
Not
but
anymore.
Realistically, yeah, exactly. We're not anymore. And the sizing that we're talking about is based on the overall peripheral view of the human eye, which is roughly about 30 degrees off axis is where most people will be able to see without having to shift eyes. If you get the screen too large, you're basically playing ping pong with your eyeballs, watching, going back and forth, watching information on the screen. And it can be very tiring. It's the same thing with in positioning a a projection screen, or for that matter, a TV, too high. You know, your head should be at roughly about a 5-degree tilt and not more, because it's going to be fairly comfortable. If it's too high and you're tilted up, you get neck strain. So if you think in terms of, I got this huge screen and my eyes and my head are bouncing back and forth and up, you know, by the end of one movie, you're exhausted. And you really don't get a good pleasurable experience out of it. So those are some of the design concepts that you've got to take in mind, is where are you actually seated and comfortably viewing the screen?
Right. I every time I go to a movie, I try and get there early, and it sounds really dumb. I try and get there super early just because I know, oh, this is going to be a great movie. There's going to be lots of people, screaming kids, etc. And I have this theater that's local to my area somewhat. And at all costs, I try and avoid it because it always sounds like the center channel's out. And my friend's like, oh, it's cheaper and this and that. I'm like, I hate to sound like that guy, but I don't want to go there because of the audio experience and this and that. And every time we go, like, I just end up going with my friend. And, you know, we might get the good seats and all that stuff right in the center, not too off axis or not too low or high where I have to, like, adjust my head in a weird, awkward position for the next 2.5 to 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Either the audio is ruined or we do get that horrible seat, and like I might just refuse to. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to sit at the very front row and like stare up at the ceiling for, you know, that long. I'm like, it's just not happening.
Exactly.
And they, for a long time, they didn't, they're like, oh, you just, you know, you're in the industry and it's, you know, they mock me and this and that. I'm like, okay, let's have one of those experiences together and then we'll never ever do it again. And I told you so for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
So we try and avoid it at all costs.
Yeah. Now, and one of the other things too to consider when you're talking about these large screens and like that, is you have to take into account, you know, how much light is in the room as well. Again, because we have so many more multi-purpose rooms as compared to dedicated rooms, when you have ambient light in a room that's not controlled, when it's hitting the screen, it can actually wash it out. It's creating more white light on the screen and reducing the contrast. And really, excuse me, contrast is what the eye sees first before it sees color. The contrast is what gives you the sharpness and so forth. So when you lose that contrast, you lose the visibility of the image. So that's, again, going back to our original part of the conversation we were talking about, window shades. Controlling the environment includes controlling the ambient light, whether it's through window shades or through special lighting. When you think in terms of projection screens and projectors, it's actually a projection system. There are three aspects or elements to a projection system. One is obviously the projector. One is obviously the projection screen. The third element is the ambient light. How much ambient light is in the room and how much can it be controlled? And the more ambient light you have in a room, the more you lose contrast and the more you lose visibility. So when we take a look at an application, one of the things that we take into consideration, is how much ambient light we have in a room and how much that ambient light is going to interfere with the projected image. And are there ways that you can compensate and eliminate that ambient light, whether it's actually controlling the light or modifying the screen or the projector? So we actually have tools available on our website. If you go to draperinc.com, we have a section that not only helps you with sizing screens and so forth, but we also have a screen selector where you can actually plug in information about your application and get recommendations for the type of screen material that you might want to use in an application. We have two different versions of the screen selection tool. One is a basic tool, and then another is what we call our Surface Selector Pro, and you actually have to have access to a dealer location in our website in order to access that screen application. But Even with the simple basic one, if you can measure the amount of ambient light in the room, or at least make a guesstimate of it, and take into account the output of the projector and the size of the screen and a couple of other applications, we can at least have a predictor, if you will, of how a screen material might work in a particular application.
Let me ask you this. I see the tool, which I think is very handy, and I'm definitely going to share some of this with some of my friends out there. There never is an application where there's zero ambient light, correct? Or am I wrong when I say that? I mean, are you never really, I mean, ideally you would have some sort of ambient light, correct? Like you would never have just a pitch black room and the projection system?
Well, you can actually get down to the point where it's virtually no ambient light in a dedicated room. One of the things you have to take into consideration is that you are having light reflect off of a screen
Okay.
back to the eye.
Right.
So depending on the environment in the room, you can get some ambient light bounce back strictly from the projected image. Even if you have no ambient light, say from a window source or a luminescent light source, just from the reflected image itself. For example, it's very popular, especially in multi-purpose rooms where you can bring the lights down, to still have it look like a regular room in the house, and therefore we have a white ceiling.
Yeah.
Okay, the light from the projected image and reflected image is going to reflect off of that white ceiling and create ambient light interference with the projected image itself. So if you're planning a dedicated room, for example, it's very wise to have a darker neutral color and non-reflective surface, if you will, on the not only the walls but on the ceiling to make sure that you don't have that reflected ambient light bouncing around in the room. So we have a demo room here at Draper, which it's completely painted, flat black. We have black drapes covering other areas where there might be some reflective, and you can get extremely dark in that room. And yet still, if you've got a screen that's a higher gain and you've got a very bright projector, you still get a lot of ambient light bouncing around inside the room.
But I'm sorry, I think I should have been a little bit more specific. I mean, if I was going to build like a and I might go this back to your demo room. If I were to build a dedicated theater and, dark walls, draperies if where needed, just for kind of like a complete blacked out experience for that for the theater, wouldn't I still have, I mean, still put in some sort of like downlighting and or sconces of sorts to give some sort of like illumination in the theater? Or
Oh.
in your theater also, do you not have any of that? Is it just complete pitch black?
Well, it's controllable, so you can turn the lights completely down, when you're doing the projection.
And so you have it completely off when you do your demos?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. For some
But
reason, I always seemed I thought that when watching a film of sorts or TV, you never have the lights completely off. But I mean, I guess again, it might depend on the room itself, because bad on the eyes and things like that, depending on how far you're sitting from, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought, like, when you go to a theater, and this could vary theaters across the nation, they always seem to have the downlighting to minimum, sconces very lit, but that might be just a safety thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in most cases in a commercial theater, you're not going to have it. I mean, even if they have the sconces go completely out, if you look to the side of the screen, you see the big red exit sign,
Right, yeah,
So
that's safety.
that's the nature of a commercial theater. In a residential theater, if you've got the proper controls, once you have that video image rolling, you can turn off, the lighting completely and have a just total dark room and be focused completely on that image.
Huh.
And again, part of the reason you want to do that is to create as not only as much color reproduction but as much contrast as possible. So you can your eye and your brain is getting all the information it possibly can.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, the hard part is when you get into the multi-purpose rooms where you can't always control 100% of the light. And that's where the different standards come in. you want to try and control and get as much contrast ratio as you can. So again, going back to the idea of having a projection system, projector screen and ambient light, you actually take the time to do measurements in the room, measuring the amount of ambient light, measuring the reflectivity and the contrast of the projector and screen. And there are mathematical calculations. You can take all of that into account and then determine, do I need to reduce more ambient light? How do I go about doing that? Do I add in window shades? Do I do a better job of putting in some kind of a light control system? Do I put in less dim light bulbs? Whatever that happens to be. Can I control the ambient light that way? Do I have to put in a brighter projector? Do I put in a brighter projector and a screen with a higher gain or a higher contrast surface? How does that affect the image? Those are all things you have to take into consideration when you're planning out a multi-purpose room.
Now, does Draper have a tool that can measure like foot candles and ambient light in a room to help them determine what type of environment they're dealing with prior to specifying one of your screens or surfaces?
We don't actually, we don't actually have a tool to do the measurement. That simply is a light meter, and we always recommend to our customers not to use the light meters that you can get as free apps on your phones.
Oh no.
Okay, because the cameras on the phones are what measures the light for you, and those are highly inaccurate. We've seen those be inaccurate as much as 15 foot candles. But a good photographic type of light meter can help you determine exactly how much light is in the room, and you take the measurement at the position where the projection screen is and also a position where the audience is in order to determine how much ambient light is in the room. our screen calculator, then you can put that information in, and it uses that as part of the calculations on the recommendations. Now, if you don't have a light meter, then we do have some basic averages. We've got a chart that you can go through and say, okay, this is the type of room that I'm working with, so this is on average what the foot candles might be, and at least use that as a basis.
Sure.
But either way, you can plug that information in, and then again, you take into account the output of the projector, the size of the screen, because, let's face it, you'll be able to have a brighter image on a screen that is, say, 100-inch diagonal as compared to one that's 150-inch diagonal, simply because you're taking the same amount of light and spreading it over a larger surface. So, the larger screen is going to be less dim with that same output of projector. So you take that into consideration as well as the ambient light, the contrast ratio of the projector, and then you take a look at the calculations that are screen surface selector will do. It calculates what the contrast ratio is predicted to be. It calculates what the reflected light, the foot Lamberts, are. It'll also calculate whether or not the throw distance is long enough based on the throw distance you plug into the calculator to determine whether or not the surface might actually hotspot based on the location of the projector and the type of screen material. So you can actually use our surface selector as part of your design tools when you're actually designing a theater.
And all this information is on the website where I can go and pick and choose and give some of the plug in this information and determine what I might eventually end up using from your company.
That's correct. That's correct.
Let me ask you this, which I think might be important. I mean, most of this stuff being on the website, I think, is awesome. I know a lot of people, you just need to know kind of a thing. But giving the information out there is really a great tool to give to another person. That does help, help sell the product, help build the knowledge base, and to help inform this person the best, whether you're a homeowner, end user, running cars off, or the installer themselves. I mean, it's great for everybody. It's good to know to help make the best informed decision. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, though. Does Draper provide or have trainings on this sort of thing that, you know, that they can come and learn more about this?
We do provide training for our. We don't sell directly to the end user. We sell through a dealer channel, so we don't actually have trainings available for the end clientele. But we can do both on-site training with our dealer base. We also offer trainings here at Draper for both the commercial and the residential dealers. So it's something, and what is really important about doing that kind of training is understanding again what happens in the different environments. And what is really good, especially if you can do one of the trainings here, is that you can actually, by going in the demo room, you can see literally side by side different screen materials and see how they truly affect the projected image.
When you say here, Draper, where is Draper located?
We are located in Spiceland, Indiana, which is about 45 minutes directly east of Indianapolis.
You're saying
Excuse me.
all these places, but I don't see it, nowhere of anywhere other than California. So I'm gonna imagine that's a beautiful place in the middle of the United States.
Well, it's Spiceland is an interesting little town. It was founded by the Quakers, I believe, in the 1850s, if I remember right. And it's a town of about 1,000 people. And Draper actually employs here, the campus here, we have about, I think it's 450 employees currently. So you could almost say we employ half the town. It's pretty close to
I was
that.
gonna guess the whole town, but that's
Yeah.
just a shot in the dark. I'm like, it's somewhere
Yeah.
near the whole town, but I don't
Yeah,
know
it
how
is.
big. I'm not sure how big Draper is, but I can imagine being number two,
Yeah.
that you guys would employ close to the whole town.
Yeah, we have a very large campus. We also have offices in the UK. As well as throughout the United States. We also have sister companies in Sweden where we do some manufacturing there as well.
Oh, nice.
Excuse me, we export into 100 different countries worldwide. So Draper's a much larger company than most people realize.
Now, you say direct to dealer. Are you also through distribution, or is it just a direct to dealer basis?
No, we do offer some through distribution. We're very we're trying to be a little bit more selective about some of the products that we offer through distribution. So because for example, we have a new line of projection screens called Tech Vision. And it's a 100% total custom product, and that's something that we want to sell exclusively through our dealer channel.
Tell me a little bit about that, the Tech Vision product.
Well, the Tech Vision is a really fantastic opportunity for us. It's Draper has gone through some really interesting changes over the last couple of years, and we've made a significant investment in our projection screen manufacturing. And one of the things that we've been able to do is actually do formulations of the screen materials here on site. One of the things that's important to note about most of the, if not all of the projection screen manufacturers, is that we don't actually manufacture our own projection screen vinyl. There are very few companies in the world that can actually manufacture goods, vinyl goods that are 120 inches or wider. In most cases, you're getting materials that are made from someone else. They're made to your specifications. For example, our standard lines of projection screens, those materials are made to our specifications. We just don't make it on site. With the Tech Vision materials, we're actually formulating them here on site. We have six, soon to be seven, different viewing surfaces to start with, anywhere from a 1.0 to a, let's see, we've got a 1.0, 1.3, 1.6, and 1.8 gain in white. We've got a 0.9 and a 1.0 in gray. And we're soon, we've got another one we'll be announcing later on, I think, in the beginning of the year. And we're continually doing, excuse me, R&D with the Tech Vision materials. The other aspect of it, the Tech Vision materials, is all of our Tech Vision materials are ISF certified. I don't know if you're familiar with the Imaging Science Foundation.
A little bit, yes.
Okay. Basically, what ISF does, they use an international standard, and they actually measure the reflective color reproduction, if you will, or reflectiveness of the projection screens to make sure that they're not shifting the color one way or another, that you get actually true color reproduction.
Correct. And
Excuse
everyone, why that's important is because if you go to like Costco's and the Best Buy's and the sections and where the TVs are the brightest colors you've ever seen, it's because the world doesn't look that way. You go outside, the grasses and stuff are brown and this off green. They're not like intensely like neon greens and yellows and blues. Calibration is a very important thing, which is a whole nother episode we're gonna have, just not today. But yes, it's important to calibrate that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. There's actually on our website, there's a brochure called, if I remember right, I just lost it. Playing to the Rods and Cones. That's what the title of the white paper is.
Oh.
But and it's a very good piece for anyone to read as far as explaining why the aspect of color reproduction and the certifications are very important. And one of the things we point out is, and it's very noticeable, especially on direct view TV, but also in some cases with commercial grade projectors as well as home theater grade projectors. In order to cheat and make something appear brighter, what manufacturers will do is they will actually add blue into the color. So where you're seeing something that looks really bright and impressive, quite often the eye is being tricked into thinking it's brighter because it's got more blue in it. So what we're doing with the Tech Vision materials is we're making sure that what is projected on it, and if it's, as you know, noted, it's calibrated with the projector properly, you're getting the actual true color. And then you're allowing the screen engineering to actually create brightness if it's needed in the application.
When you're saying they're adding blue, they're just producing that extra color to give it that extra bump of color or tone.
Yeah, they're actually, if you think in terms of the color, especially with projectors, to be specific, as a combination of red, green, and blue, they'll just make the blue more prominent in order to make it appear brighter.
Oh, okay. You know,
Okay.
what I want to do is I'd like to have Sharp on the show and ask him, where does the yellow come from? Where does the yellow come from? It's been driving me nuts. But that
Yeah,
again is a whole nother conversation.
that's one I've had several different people give me their opinions on it. I myself don't. I'm relatively agnostic when it comes to things like that. The key to it for me is making sure that everything is as close to dead on specification as possible. And that's what we like about the ISF specification, because it's not just one person's opinion. It's actually a specification that has been used since, if I remember right, the 1930s, if not the 1950s, and it's an international spec. So it's not something that just, one manufacturer said this is accurate. It's actually something that's a measurable spec.
Draper providing the best, most accurate picture since the beginning of time. Or before my time, anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
Which isn't very long for me, because I'm not super old, but I'm not super young, so we'll just say that.
Yeah, it's really it's a brand new revelation for us, and with the materials now that we can formulate, not only are they color accurate with the different gains, because of the fact that it's engineered technology, one of the things that we're able to do is increase the gains without reducing the viewing cone. That's one thing that we really didn't get a chance to talk a whole lot about. But when we talk about gains, the gain is the perceived brightness of the screen. And the standard way to increase the gain is to focus the light path in a narrower viewing area. So you're concentrating more light in a smaller space. When I talk to dealers about that, the way I explain it is when you're a kid and you took a magnifying glass and you made that focal point in order to, burn a piece of wood or something like that. Okay.
Okay.
In a very real sense, that's kind of what projection, higher gain projection screens are doing. They're focusing the light in a narrower light path. With the TechVision materials, because of the fact that we've been able to engineer with the formulations, we're actually able to spread out that viewing cone but still increase the gain. So, you know, you've got a much larger area that you can see a brighter picture.
I would love to talk more about that, more about your the lifts and quietness, fabrics and offerings, and because I have actually a lot more questions. However, that is going to be a really long conversation, I think, and maybe more focused towards a different conversation from the company. So what I would like to do, I'd like to invite you back on the show in the future, maybe as we get closer to that new product offering line that you kind of alluded to. I'd like to maybe focus something around that time, and we can get further into lifts, how loud or quiet they are or aren't, the types of fabric for window coverings, and viewing angle, just a little bit more in-depth conversation about this, because I want to know more. You've taught me a lot. I've learned a lot. You've shared a lot. You've been very helpful. And I think this has been a great episode, and I really want to do maybe even a part two with you guys and you. I think that would be great if you'd like to come back.
I'd love the opportunity. I think given what you've got as far as questions, we can get at least 4 or 5 shows out of this.
That's what I mean. I'm like, oh, I don't know how many hours. I mean, you're ahead of me, and I know we've already done so far in the evening. I think this is a good stopping point. Everyone listening, if you'd like to learn more or you want to get a little more information about some of the topics we've covered, you know, types of screen, illumination, and thing like that, if you head over to DraperInc.com, DraperInc.com, you can learn all this stuff for the most part. I believe it's all there, with the exception of the Surface Selector Pro. You need to be a dealer. But if you're inquiring to be a dealer, I'm pretty sure you can go to the contact section and find how to become a dealer or learn more, get some training at DraperInc.com. If you are a social person like myself, you could check them out and learn some more on their blog. Blogging, I think, is a dying art that some people aren't doing. I do it. I love it. But that's my own nerd dreams and such. But Draper is actively doing it. And I think if you want to learn more, their blog is a great place to learn more. Aside from all this great information we've covered, it's already on their website. But if you head over to blog.draperinc.com, you can check out their blog, check out the posts that they have for you. Lots of information. Again, technology is ever-changing, so I think this is going to be just keep going on and on and on. And you can get all this free information. It doesn't cost you anything but your time, and that's basically all we have. And if in time, tomorrow, Twitter still exists, you can head over to at Draper Inc., Draper Inc. That's them on Twitter. They have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/DraperInc. If you're more of the business side of things, get over to LinkedIn. It's linkedin.com/company/DraperInc. If you like pinning things, that's your thing. You want to do that? You're welcome to do that. It's pinterest.com/DraperInc. And YouTube, because you're more of a visual person, maybe like myself, because we're talking about projection screens, visual, there you go. YouTube.com/user/DraperInc video. And I will say the word I feel that this thing is more of than you know it as. Octothorpe or pound sign, or for you younger kids, #DraperInc video, #, whatever you want to call it, P/U. I notice Octothorpe, but that's fine. It's a number sign for those of you who didn't catch that. That's their YouTube account. You can check that out. Bob, if they have any questions for you, is there any way they can reach you specifically?
The easiest way is just through my email, which is bhadsel@draperinc.com. We've got a contact page on our website, and you can look us up there.
I wouldn't have given my personal email, but I'm going to do it anyway since you did. You've inspired me. If you guys want to yell at me and give me all your likes and dislikes, you can email me personally. It's Johnny, JohnnyMotA3, the number 3, that is, @gmail.com. I like Google, so that's my Gmail account. It's personal. You can tell me whatever you want. Just no spam. That's all I ask, you know. All good things. You want to yell? Go ahead. Twitter, it's @jmota3, JMOTA, the number 3. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram @jmota3. I'm on Google+. LinkedIn, just Google my name. I'm sure something will come up. Hopefully it's all good things. And if you like what I've had to say, let me know. Or if you didn't like what I said, let me know that. That'd be great. Until next time, Bob, thank you for taking the time to be on the show. I had a great learning experience, and again, I'm looking forward to have you back on. So,
Sounds good, Johnny. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity.
yeah, everyone, this has been AV Insider. We will catch you on the next episode.